I'm Emily Thede, author of The Last Fenestra, coming in 2022 from Wednesday Books.
And I'm Anna, a teacher and a writer in the query trenches.
You're listening to Basic Pitches, where we...
Two basic pitches...
break down the basics of writing and being a writer.
Hello, Emily.
Hi, Anna.
And hello, Lindsay.
Hi, Anna and Emily.
Yay!
Welcome to the Basic Pitches.
We have Lindsay Ely. Every now and then I have like nightmares that I'm pronouncing that wrong.
No, you got it. You just got to remember the eels. It's all about the eels.
I remember from Pitch Wars, the year I entered and you were my mentor, looking at your wish list, the mentor wish list, and you were like, it's Lindsay Ely, eel, and then hyphen Y. And I was like, you need to remember this because you don't know how to pronounce anything, you simpleton.
That's part of the fun of like writer friendships, that so much of it's made online, that I've definitely like made really close friendships with people. And then the first time we talked on the phone, I have to do that like, can you tell me how you say your name? Because I have no idea.
I do that all the time. Even when I'm like, sure, I'm like, I just like, you got to double check with people, you know, especially like, like a panel or something. It's like, okay, what's everybody's name? How do I actually say your name? Just want to be careful.
That's what I just did. As soon as it was coming out of my mouth, I was like, you're saying this like you're so certain. Watch. The universe is going to be like,
I was just listening to a podcast where they were talking about like the most awkward mispronunciations in Oscar history. So I feel like we're doing better than that. You know, like what was it?
The John Travolta one.
Yes.
I don't remember what he said.
It was like,
it was terrible.
Anis Nazim. Like, that's not remotely close
to
the same.
You didn't even get any of the right letters in there. Nope. Like, what's going on?
So see, we're ahead of the curve here. We're ahead of the curve.
Oh my gosh. That gives me such secondhand embarrassment. I die of secondhand embarrassment. I can't do it.
I get embarrassed for the other person though.
Yeah.
Because you know that moment where you're like, do I correct them or just roll with it? Like, ooh.
So yeah, no, sorry. And so like actually like my Ely is my pseudonym. It's my writing name. It's not my real last name. And my real last name is one of those. Yeah, a lot of people, people who have known me for years and years do not know this, like including like friends in Boston who don't even know me from writing because like they know my book. So they just assume that's my real name. And then they were like, wait a minute, that's not your last. I'm like, yeah, don't worry about it. But my real last name is like.
You came to Asheville and I should have stolen your driver's license
right?
for whatever reason.
You should have tried.
What?
but like my real last name, which I will not obviously say for privacy reasons, is like. It's a very, very strange, like what happens when your like ancestors come from Russia and probably pronounce their name once to some like immigration like, agent. And then they just like, yep, they write down whatever they heard, you know?
I have other friends who have pseudonyms for their first name as writers. And it's so weird for me to know that, like, I'm just calling them a name that is not their name. But at the same time, like, it's almost weirder to call them by their actual name when, like, we're operating in a circle where, I don't know, it's just...
Yeah. Oh, it gets weird. It gets weird when you start feeling like everyone's got, like, all these... Has, like, three or four names sometimes, so, you know? If you
And then if you switch genres.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Whereas I just stuck with my actual name because I'm petty like that and I wanted to make sure that anyone I ever didn't like would see my name in the bookstore.
I thought about that with teaching and I was, you know, I thought very heavily about the style of writing that I have that lends itself to upper, you know, like upper YA crossover. And I teach middle school and I was like, one of my kids, I don't care. That's their parents' decision. That's not my fault.
Yeah. I mean, if you decide to move into, like, adult erotica, then you can come up with a pseudonym there.
What's to say I haven't already?
Oh.
Now, is this where I can actually share a joke with our friends? So my friends found out that I write, and so they looked up Anna Mercier to see if they can see, like, what I write. And I'm like, I'm not as open with that as you think I am. Get away from me. I love them dearly if they're listening. But then there is an adult erotica author whose name is Anne Mercier.
Oh.
Of course there is.
So now they talk about this author apparently has a Xander series. So they often ask me, how's Xander doing? And for Christmas, I was gifted a Xander erotica novel by Anne Mercier.
So that is on my shelf. That is great.
So there's that. Oh, no, your pop filter, not a fairy wing today.
No.
This episode marks... Rest in peace, Fairy Wing Pop Filter. We have an adult
pop filter.
Trying to be
a real professional now. A real pop filter.
Professional. So, Lindsay, we have you on the show today to talk about lots of different things. But first, can you tell us a little bit about you? Like, the books you have.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I forgot I would have to do this part. I'm so bad at doing the intro. Like,
no, it's
the
okay.
worst. Anyways, yeah. Okay. So, like, yeah, I'm Lindsay Ely. I'm an author. Y'all know that much. So my first book, Gunslinger Girl, came out in 2018.
Whoop.
And it is a YA dystopian Western with lots of shootouts and all that kind of stuff. And then my next book actually comes out in just over a month. It is a collaboration book for the Overwatch video game, and it is called cool. Deadlock Rebels. And it is the story. It is a YA novel about the Ashe and McCree characters. So I'm pretty excited that's coming out soon. It was a lot of fun to work on, and yeah, just excited about that one. It has great cover. Cool. It has great cover art too, and I'm like
It really does. That cover, like, I am a fan of Overwatch. And those are the two characters I can't play because I can't play whatever it is. The flick characters, like, you have to flick as you, like, shoot them. Somebody who listens, who plays video games knows what I'm talking about. Like, they're the pistol characters and you have to, like, flick aim. I don't know. I can't do that. Please give me something that just, like, you know, soldier. But I love their aesthetic. I love their story all the time. So...
yeah, that was actually one of, like, the most exciting things was, like, because I knew you played Overwatch because I had seen you, like, tweeting about it. And I'm like, oh, my God. There was, like, two or three people where I was like, I can't believe I can't tell these people for, like, months that I'm doing this thing.
It's so exciting.
Can you tell us a little bit about how that worked in terms of, like, you getting hooked up with that? Because I know the process is different with IP sort of stuff. Like, did they reach out to you or did you have a chance to, like, was it, like, audition? Is that what they call
it? Yeah, well, a little bit of both. Okay. Like, they reached out to my agent and basically, like, I think it was just – basically an email like, hey, like, we have this book that we want to create, and, like, you know, would Lindsay be interested in possibly working on it? And then it basically moved on to sort of a little bit of an audition where, like, they were like, oh, can you write a sample? Like, they gave, like, a synopsis of what the book was going to be, and so I was able to look at it and basically, like, write a couple chapters sample as sort of, like, the audition part of it, and then it worked out. So
that is so cool.
And I'm actually really excited. Like, I actually wrote two chapters because I couldn't decide which scene to write. And both of the scenes are, like, it's still in the book, which was, like, a really fun part. That came, almost completely intact, so.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah. And it works really well because it's a similar, check me if I'm wrong, it's a similar vibe, similar, not maybe setting, but, like, similar genre.
I mean, it's pretty similar, yeah. I mean, so it's a little bit, Overwatch is set in the future for anyone who doesn't play the game. It's about 60 something years in the future, I think. Mm-hmm. Don't quote me on this. I feel bad that I am actually not a player of the game. It is a Blizzard game, and I got really excited because I was a huge, like, Diablo 2 addict way back in the day, and it's actually one of the reasons I don't play a lot of video games anymore because I will just lose myself to them completely. But anyways, yeah. It's set about 65 years in the future, and so this is actually following a character. The character is about 20-something years, 21-ish, 22-ish years before the current Overwatch universe. So, yeah, it is set in the future. Cool. It is set in, like, the Southwest. So there's a whole Western vibe to it. It's very much like a Western novel. And the character, again, is a sharpshooter. So, like, yeah, it was definitely within my wheelhouse. So that was fun to do.
That's awesome.
Please, at any point, did you accidentally write Pity instead of Ash?
I didn't, actually, because there was enough of a difference. Like, the characters are very different. So. Yeah,
they are. They truly are.
Yeah.
I've heard sometimes, like, in normal times with IP work, like, sometimes people actually get to go and, like, travel to the place where the writers are, like, do kind of a writer's room thing. And I've always thought that would be, like, amazing because I'm such a collaborative writer. Like, obviously, you can't collaborate when you're writing a book alone. But, like, I love the process of working with agents, working with editors, working with CPs. Like, it's just so much fun. And I feel like some of the coolest ideas come when you have a bunch of different people coming at things and just, like, spitballing stuff. So I think that's really cool. And would love to do something like that someday.
Yeah, I would love to do it again. I actually had a lot of fun. And it was actually, for me, very much like the perfect COVID novel because I've been working on stuff. I had gone on sub right as COVID happened for another
book. So did I. Yeah.
Which is probably not going anywhere. But I know, sad face.
I love that book.
So do I. Oh, it's okay. Someday.
Someday.
But I was like, I had started some other stuff and was just kind of floundering. Like, you know, you just can't really get your feet under you.
Yes, I do.
And I remember, and I think actually I had sent Anna like two chapters. I'd been working on something and I literally was like, I need to switch this to first person, I think. And she actually read like two chapters that were first and third of the same book. It was a mess. I was just not getting anywhere with anything.
I mean, like that, you have, it's two projects that you've been working on, right? Like it was the one project.
Don't we all have a million projects going on?
I know. And both of them, I love very dearly. The one I have not finished because I don't think you finished writing.
Oh, no. I haven't even gotten much further from what you've
read. Where is that? Sorry, not to put you on the spot.
So that is like my next, that was when I was having, I had to put it away because I couldn't get the magic system working. I just could not get it in my head working, right? Yeah. And I finally figured out, I think, the solution to it just fairly recently, which is nice. But in the meantime, so basically like backtracking a little bit, I had been just floundering. And then we got this email to work on the Overwatch book and it ended up being perfect because it was so much pressure off of me coming up with the actual, because they give you like the general storyline. They give you like a general synopsis and there's still like a ton of room for like creativity and like coming up with like your own scenes and ideas. But like it just helped give me a path instead of me floundering my way through my, because I'm very much a pantser. You know, I was just like throwing stuff against the wall and these in my work in some progress and just like not really getting anywhere. So just the both having a deadline and something to work off of, like the ideas to work off of, was just like perfect COVID timing for me. So, you know, being able to write a whole book while in a quarantine was kind of like, okay, I feel like way more accomplished as opposed to just like feeling like I couldn't get my feet under me on anything else. Right.
Yeah, I almost wish there were more people that had read my first book just so that I could be like, hey, anybody want to give me ideas for the sequel? Because going from like the, you know, having a book that you invest so much time and energy in and you really love it and then it's like starting the next project, I think always feels like just like falling off a cliff without a parachute. The thought of having someone else just kind of like provide some of that creative like fuel is pretty awesome.
Yeah. I'll give you the bones and you get to flush on. Okay, that was kind of a weird, gross, morbid image.
Oh, no, we've done that before because we always talk about Victoria Schwab's Story Corps.
V.E. Schwab. Yeah.
I've never read that. I'm very bad. I never read any craft books, and I need to change
that. I don't actually know if she's actually written it. I think she just has.
I think it's just a talk about it. But
I don't even know.
Or Y'all Fest.
I think it was Y'all. Anna sent it to me, so it's fantastic.
Changed my life.
Yeah. I mean, she's great. Her books are fantastic. I'm like those top 10 like authors that you are just like insanely jealous of. She's on that list.
Yep. The books that you really love until you start writing, and then there's like a party that's like, I love this, but also it's hurting me because I don't think I can do this. And
I love the idea that I know sometimes it can feel closed in, but I think the idea of getting something that is not yours to write a book about, like this is not your thought, this is not your, you didn't have to come up with the bones, you just get to do the fun part.
Yeah.
I don't know. That seems very interesting.
It was like I had no idea even what to expect. I just had like – and I'm not like typically a collaborative person. I'm usually a very like individual, like I want to do my own thing. So I had no idea what to expect, but I was pleasantly surprised at how much fun it was to do. And like, part of it was the characters are great. The setting is great. You know, like there's just like some great elements of this game that, like I start, you know, when it was like watching all of their cinematics, I was watching a lot of some of their gameplay and it was just like, this is like very much like if I was playing video games right now, this would be the sort of game that I'd be playing. So it worked in that way, but yeah, it took a lot of pressure off and you just kind of let me like, just, it was like writing fan fiction. It was literally
fan
fiction.
Yeah, that's the fun. Awesome. It's taking characters that are already so well developed and getting to just like play with them and explore and experiment is so fun.
That is fantastic.
Very cool. So do you have any ideas for what you're going to be working on next? Or
So I've been working on something since basically the start of the year. I'm like, and it's very much like first drafty right now, like just a completely different thing. I'm not even going to like tell you what it's about. It's just like another fantasy. You know me. Like I want to really, this is so weird. Like I'm on my second Western. I really want to write fantasy. That's what I got into writing for. And it's funny how our paths don't always go the way we expect them to.
Yeah, true.
So I keep saying, I'm not going to write any other Western. Meanwhile, I have another idea for a Western. But that's something different. But yeah, so I have a work in progress that I'm working on. And it's one of those like, you know, it's a little bit of like maybe like a Serpent and Dove vibe type thing. I'm not going to go much further than that because, you know,
you're for it.
Extremely in the early stages. But like, yeah, I'm probably about 3/4 through a first draft on that one. So
nice. Are you thinking YA, upper YA, adult? I know that a lot of people are moving around these days.
Yeah, so it's pretty YA. Okay. But yeah, but like my stuff tends to be on that cuspy, you know, thing. Same. Anyways. It's definitely like I love writing like violent stuff, so like it's really hard to like not be on that that upper YA.
I want my
fight scenes.
Yeah, I'm so intrigued to see kind of what happens in that kind of in between like YA and adult space over the next few years, because I already feel like there's just been a lot of really cool stuff happening in that kind of younger adult section. Like, there isn't a good word for it. You know, the new adult area, I think, is really finally starting to get a lot of really cool books, and a lot of the big authors who established themselves in YA are now scooting over there. And so it's obviously not considered new adult, but it kind of is. And so it'll be interesting to see kind of what the YA and that adult space that would be new adult, if new adult was a thing, like what happens over the next few years, I think is going to be really cool.
Yeah. And absolutely, because I mean, just because we were talking about Victoria Schwab, like her books absolutely fall into that. Like a lot of her books fall into that space. And I'm like, I love that space. That's the space I love to read in. It's the space I love to write in. And it's almost like a space that doesn't exist, or it just, you have these books falling on one side or the other for no discernible reason.
Right. Yeah, because I think I just looked up yesterday, because I think The Invisible Life of Addie LaRue is technically an adult book.
It is, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Again, I think when I first heard about it the first 10 times, I assumed it was upper YA. But again, I think that we're just kind of, we're moving that line around and redefining kind of where the threshold is, which could mean some really cool things for readers, but we shall see.
It is strange that, like, just going back, because I mentioned Serpent and Dove, like, I read that, and I'm like, I didn't realize how saucy that book gets.
It is. It's a saucy one.
And so I was actually very surprised. Like, this is a YA book, and this is saucier than I would have pegged YA to be, no pun intended. Mm-hmm.
I think the sequel might be even spicier.
And it just got that.
Depending on.
Got that. Nailed it. Oh, no! Stop! The puns. They're everywhere. I'm gonna go now.
But yeah,
I'm gonna interview
the genuine innocent portion of this. Is really like, yeah, we like people like that space, and I would really like it. Publishers, come on, get on, like, give us that space.
Oh my gosh,
give us that space to work in.
That's right. That's Wednesday is a great place for that. Wednesday is very much kind of a crossover imprint, and it's really nice, because I'll write things, and I think, like, am I pushing it here? Like, is this, you know, is this okay in the YA space? And it's really nice to be at an imprint that is so targeted towards that crossover audience that, like, I've never gotten pushback so far. So
yeah, I am surprised at what you know is allowed to sort of like get through. You know, because I think you know, like we're in America, it's very puritanical at many times. But like, you know, like I'm reading Gunslinger Girl, and I like there's multiple characters who are prostitutes in the book, because it is a Western, and I'm like, well, who doesn't love the prostitutes in a Western? and I mean, specifically me, I love the, you know, the prostitute characters. And one of the things that I wanted to do was make characters that were more centralized and less tragic than a lot of your typical prostitute characters. And, but, you know, like one of the prostitute characters is also a love interest for the main character. And I'm like, they're never going to let me get away with this. And then it was like, no one touched a thing. And I'm like, whoa. Wow,
yeah, well,
happen?
I mean, I think when I think that whole, you know, when it comes to prostitute characters, especially in kind of that YA crossover space, it's, you know, because in so often in fantasy settings and in Western settings, like women had such prescribed roles of what they could do and couldn't do. And so, you know, when you're bringing in characters who are prostitutes, in a lot of ways they have agency, or at least they can engage in the world in a different way than some other characters can, and I think that's really fertile ground for creativity. But even like what we were talking with Shadow and Bone, you know, I'm watching this with my partner, and I occasionally kind of wanted to lean over and be like, remember, this is YA. Because again, I think people who don't read YA would not watch that and assume it was YA. They also wouldn't assume that any of the characters, they would assume the characters are, you know, young adults, not necessarily young teens. And but I think it's kind of nice that I think we're getting to the point now where at least authors don't have to claim every character is 16 or 17. Like when they're writing those characters that feel like they're 18, 19, 20, a little older, at least now we're allowed to give them accurate ages. Like, I mean, in my book, the characters are 18 and 20, and it is YA crossover, but I'm really glad I didn't have to say they were, you know, 16 and 17, because there is a difference. Right. So.
Yeah, definitely. And and if you look, you read Six of Crows, and man, like Inej's story is dark.
Yeah.
You know, her backstory is extremely dark.
Steven's been watching it with me. He watched, well, we've finished the whole show. And the whole time, Steven would look over and he was like, this is fantastic. Like, one, he was telling all of our friends about it. He's like, I'm not kidding. I will tell you. And so it's not Anna just squawking.
Yeah.
Like, I will tell you, go watch the show. And we had a good conversation about the idea of like sex work. you know, sex workers being in a young adult-centered show. And it's, I think it's a really good testament that you don't treat the young adult, an upper young adult audience, like they don't know these things exist.
Yes.
They know these things exist.
Yeah.
They are aware of the world around them. There are so many different walks of life around here that they know that this could be a walk of life for them. And you shouldn't shy away from those things. You shouldn't shy away from those
topics. It's better to present them and examine them and maybe, you know, show different critical ways to look at different things than to just pretend they don't exist. Because
exactly.
Especially teen readers, like they can see through that. If we try to create worlds that are so unrealistic or so like cleaned up easier and simpler than the world we live in, they're going to be like, there's no way.
So. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. Because like, you know, one of the things that like I was doing in Gunslinger Girls, like just, the sex workers are presented positively, you know, the prostitute characters are not, they're not tragic. They're not trying to leave their lives. They actually like, these are kind of some of the best lives in that world at that time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my main character, like initially, like kind of like reacts with like negativity and like, you know, slightly scandalized when she first meets them. And then she was like, you know what? I have no right to judge. You know, like, I don't know what I would do if I was put in these positions.
Right.
And it is, you know, like it becomes more of a positive thing.
Yeah. Because you're showing all the
reclaiming agency.
It's not a cliche. Yeah. It's not, you're not writing a cliche because like cliches of those.
That's exactly what I didn't want to do. There's so many cliches, especially in the Western world with prostitute sex worker characters that I was like, we're not doing that.
Yeah.
I love it. I'm excited. Like I'm real excited for this nebulous age category thing. I don't know what publishing is going to do with
it.
That's somebody else's job. But like I, Emily and I have talked about it. I remember the first time in high school that I didn't want to read what was categorized as young adult at the time because young adult was still kind of emerging as a thing.
Yeah.
Hunger Games hadn't come out yet. Like there was still young adult, but it wasn't like what I think it was still very juvenile.
It wasn't what it is today.
And I remember being like, I don't want this. I want my mom's murder mysteries that we would listen to in the car. I want something that's like a little more scandalous. And I remember reading my first like tried and true romance novel in Spanish class and like this sex scene is happening. And I'm like, you know, just sitting in the front row of Spanish class, like praying to God that the teacher doesn't walk by and see it. But then also thinking in my head justifiably, like what else is there that – I'm about to graduate for God's sake, and I don't want to go read the ancient old white man fantasy. Please, I want something that's more accessible for me. So I don't know. That's a really exciting time for.
Yeah, it was hard to find back then. Like same sort of thing. Like I never really read any young adult when I was a young adult. I was reading Stephen King. I was reading.
Yes.
You know, I was reading a lot of like I had this like whole like fictional historical fiction. novels that I went through like a whole period of those and like but it was all adult stuff. It was almost no children's stuff. I think I went from Nancy Drew to Stephen King and never looked back, you know?
Yeah.
I think my transition was Anne McCaffrey. I went from like reading Kidlit to reading Anne McCaffrey and that kind of like scooted me over into the world of adult science fiction and fantasy. And then I read a lot of the old classics and some of them, you know, are great. I'm glad I have that foundation. But I remember even as like a 16-year-old being like, wow, some of the depictions of women in these books are awful. I was like, wow, just cardboard cutouts that are just used for one purpose. That's just great. And like, I know there was other stuff out there, but, you know, I didn't have access to, you know, my own personal librarian who could tell me like who could help me find the nuggets of gold in there. And I look at the world of publishing now, and there's just so much more out there, and it's great. And I love seeing that, you know, progress and change. So very cool. Now I get to write it.
So earlier, Lindsay, just to like help us, because I try and help us stay on track, even though my brain is like, let's talk about all the things. We talked about like our path, right? And I think that's what we're here to talk about today, if I'm not mistaken. Like, a path, especially when we work full-time or we watch children, children full-time. do you want to bring this heightened conversation down to angst?
Yeah, let's bring it down to the angsty level. Let's talk about the work-life balance. just give a little background. You guys know this, but just for anyone listening, like I work full-time. Writing is my side hustle. And prior to my current position, I actually worked for 10 years at a Boston a local Boston publisher in the trade division. So like I worked in publishing for 10 years before my team actually got cut. So, so that was fun. But yeah, so like it's a strange, hard thing when so the dream is that you become a writer and then suddenly that's going to pay all of your bills and that is going to be your full-time life. And that's just like what's going to happen. And that's not actually true for most people. It's true for some. But I'll tell you right now, it's not true for me in the slightest, you know? that's sort of like, that's something that I've been struggling with and thinking about a lot lately, especially in the world of COVID, when it feels like we should have so much more time and yet somehow we do not. I don't really know where to go with that, but like it is hard. I can't imagine doing it with kids. Emily, I know you have kids.
Easier when they went to school not in my family room.
Yes. Yeah.
Right.
But I mean, like, I know there are writers out there, there are writer parents out there who are, you know, trying to hit deadlines, work full-time jobs, and take care of their kids. I don't even know.
Hat is off to all of them. I don't know when they sleep.
Yeah, you are superheroes. Right. Anyone who is doing that, you are super people to me. But yeah, I think that it contributes a lot to the feeling of like we were talking about like you're falling behind. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for me specifically, like I've yet to get a multi-book deal. Mm-hmm. None of my deals they've all been single books. So, you know, like one of the things that I dream of is like, let's get that multi-book deal so that I've got a couple things going. At the same time, the funny thing is that I almost live in fear of that multi-book deal because then you have deadlines.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, having worked on the Overwatch book and having it, the first draft had a pretty tight turnaround to the point where I was like, how am I going to do this?
Yeah.
And it was lucky that, you know, I feel lucky for COVID in that respect because it wasn't like I was trying to like do it around my social life or anything either. Like I wasn't going anywhere. We weren't doing any in-person events with my work or anything like that I would have to be at. So I had the time.
Yeah. And that's the difference too. I think when, you know, one of the things that sounds so great when you're a querying writer is the thought of like selling something on proposal or like IP work. And then once you get close to that position, you start to realize like, oh, but the one real benefit of not selling on proposal of, you know, you're selling your first book is that it's written. So you have deadlines, but they're revision deadlines. And it's a little different when suddenly the deadline is like, write a book now.
Yeah, write the whole book.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. And so sometimes it's kind of like, well, with multi-book deals, that's kind of baked into it is that you're going to have one maybe that's finished when you sell it. And then you suddenly have to write another one. And it's a great problem to have, but it can be intense, especially in the world these days.
Well, it's intense too in that like, and people talk about this all the time, but publishing is very high expectation on the amount of content generation you are able to do. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's just so easy to burn out in an industry like this, especially if you're doing well. If they want you to be producing book after book after book, you can burn out super easily.
Right.
And I know some writers who have gotten to that groove who are really good at it. And then you see like other authors just take breaks and I always wonder, like, I want to like kind of know the background on a lot of that. Cause you're like, okay, so what happened, you know?
Yeah.
Are you just like tired? You just need a break? Like, that's fine. I think that's good. And, it, you know, it kind of comes down to, like, it is a great problem to have. It doesn't actually pay the bills for everybody, even if you are getting multi-book deals. And I think that's a little bit of an issue in publishing.
Yeah.
It's true. Yeah, I mean, like, I was a little disappointed initially when I first got my deal because, you know, this was back in March, April of 2020, and I was like, so is it going to be a 2021 book? And they said, no, probably, you know, 2022, probably mid-2022. And at the time, I was kind of like, oh, man, that's so far away. Like, that's so long to wait. And now I'm so thankful to have that time because it gives me time to, you know, to write my sequel without feeling like I have to, like, as I would have had to turn that in by now if it was a 2021 book. Right. So I think one thing I always encourage writers to do, like when they're going on submission, when they're considering kind of those multi-book deals, is to make sure they have a conversation with their agent about like, how much time does it actually take you to write a book? Not in a perfect world, in the real world, because I think it's important to know that. And yeah, like you said, you know, most authors can't live off writing until they're really established. But even if you can, like that adds another layer of pressure when that's your only source of income. So it's a complicated decision for sure.
Yeah, and it's in, you know, just like it made me think of like the Overwatch thing was kind of funny because I did the sample and like, you know, went ahead with the contract and I, you know, it was one of like I had the question like, when do you want the first draft? Or like, I think I'd asked my agent like, you know, how long do you think I'll have to write the first draft? Like, I just need to know if they're going to need it in like 6 weeks or something like that, or 4 to 6 weeks. And like sort of jokingly thinking that like that was just like a like no time at all. And then yeah, that's actually kind of what it turned out to be. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, I guess I'm writing a book in 4 to 6 weeks, which is fine, actually. Like it actually worked out. Again, like it was a little bit different. It was a new process to me. So I didn't really, you know what it would be like writing off of a synopsis.
And yeah.
So like it worked out fine. It was actually great. I had enjoyed the process very much. But it was a little bit of a, oh, no, I've never written anything this fast before.
How detailed was the synopsis? Was it, we're talking like not one page, 10 pages?
Oh, it was, okay. Yeah, probably think about 2 pages. Like it was not okay, very wow, long. So like I said, like, there was a lot of room for creativity to bring in, you know, my ideas for scenes and stuff like that.
But that means you also had to generate
that's true,
a whole
yeah,
lot
yeah,
in right, a little over
luckily,
a month. Yeah.
Luckily, the book is nowhere near my usual, like my works of length. In terms of length, like my last my last first draft, I was like 120,000 words. This is not the Overwatch book. The Overwatch book is like less than half that. Okay. But yeah, I'm a much longer writer typically. So
yeah,
and that's where yeah, and you know, it's like especially it depends on what kind of like books you're writing. Like I know fantasy and science fiction tend to be a little bit longer. So like you have to like take that into account when yeah, you are trying to generate, you know. If you're not on deadline, like for me, like one of the, you know, frustrating things is that you sit there and you write a book and you have no idea if you can sell it or not.
Oh yeah. Which is really hard.
Yeah.
It's
extremely stressful.
Yeah. I have a really good friend who writes.
I'm staring at the ceiling because like this is, I'm going to be upfront and honest and you both know I love you very, very, very much, but still, you know, about to query again.
Yeah.
Like, I know we have agents and we have book deals and I'm sitting here going, you think you're falling behind? And well, like, I don't know, that little thought creeps in where it's like,
there's
and
always
then,
that stage. Yeah. Comparison is the thief of joy always.
It but, is. And yeah. I don't, and like, that's the thing is I really want to like stress, like I have gotten over that hump. Like I think everybody goes through that stage and you're cursing and you're like, I love you very much, but I also hate your guts. I don't hate your guts.
That's the eternal truth of publishing, I think, is no matter yeah, where you are, no matter where you are in the process, yeah, there's always going to be someone that seems like they're getting there faster or they're getting yeah, something you want. Right. And it's just, it is.
And it's the faster thing. And it's the, yeah, like what you said about, like, I have just spent, like, this book right now, thanks to, you know, that whole path and the idea of almost languishing behind is, you know, and not only have, you know, you drafted, you're working on your work in progress now. I'm doing mine, about to query it. It's like that process feels even longer because of this past year specifically. Mm-hmm. There's been so much like big T traumas that it's so hard. And you think, okay, I've spent a year and a half on this. Normally I wouldn't spend that time. I have no idea. Have no idea what's going to happen to it. And then it's really hard not to think I just wasted, and I'm putting big bunny ears around that word because it's not true. But like that idea of like, I'm languishing, I'm wasting this time on this book and you have no idea.
Yeah, no.
I remember that feeling distinctly. And yet now I look at my, you know, my computer full of books that I wrote before and I think, okay, well, what's nice to know is that I have stuff there. Yes. That again, it's, you feel like when you stop querying a book, you feel like it is dead. You feel like you tried and you spent all that time and then it's gone. But the nice thing is once you've written a book, it's not gone. Like it's still there. You can still pull it yeah, out later. You can change it. I mean, I have a, you know, a YA sci-fi that I queried briefly, you know, a year and a half, 2 years. I don't know what time is anymore. And I'm now debating whether I can turn it into a second world fantasy, like taking the bones of the story, but changing the setting to make it maybe slightly more, you know, marketable in today's market. And, you know, again, it's still there. It didn't go away yeah, in a puff of smoke. So
there's always, it's always great to have the trunk books.
Yes.
You know, you never know what's going to come back. And like, I absolutely know, like, this is not like, we all know books that are trunk books that yeah, were trunk books. We just don't know that they were trunk books. We yes, probably all read trunk books.
I heard someone recently that was actually saying that like the book, their first book was not the, like they went on sub with one book and it didn't sell. And then they pulled out the trunk book and that ended up being their debut. So, you know, you never know.
You really don't. And it's, yeah, it is hard not to compare your, like your spot in wherever totally. You are to everybody else. Like, you know, like I was feeling really great. Like I wrote a whole book last year, and then I've wrote 3/4 of a book this year. And then I looked at somebody else who was like, I wrote 3 books so far this year. And I'm like, oh man. But then again, like going back to the work-life balance, like a lot of these times when I'm looking at these authors talking about their work, it's like they are doing this full time. And that, you know, or most like, I don't know what, it's not really part-time. It's not full-time. It's like somewhere in the middle, you know?
Right.
So it does come down to like, what kind of time do you have to invest in this work? Like, I absolutely know that I could be working a lot faster if I wasn't at a day job, but if I wasn't at my day job, I wouldn't be able to pay my bills. So.
Yeah. And there's also, I think, you know, people go through kind of different mental phases. Like, I know, you know, it's hard for me to break down like how much of the past year and my like lack of getting stuff done was directly related to like having my kids at home versus just like kind of the overwhelming like, ugh, of the world. But I'm someone that usually does draft a book in 6 to 8 weeks. And I think part of it for me was always kind of the feeling that Anna was describing of like, I have to catch up, I have to catch up. So I had this fire underneath me to write as fast as I could. And so for me, in some ways, there's almost been a difficult readjustment now that I've sold, like I have to write the sequel, but it's already sold. And so I almost have to trick my brain into feeling the pressure again, because otherwise it's very hard for me to get going. And, you know, at this point, I'm 50,000 words into a draft that I started last summer, which is just not how I work normally at all. And it's, you know, it's been like walking through quicksand just because, and I never thought that would happen because that's not usually my process. But I think being kind of kind to ourselves and remembering that life gets in the way, whatever it is, and your process is going to look different for different books, and that's okay.
Yeah, the creative process is not a fixed thing, and I think we all kind of forget that, and we can't force it to do something we don't know. Like, you can't force it to do certain things.
Absolutely. That's something that I have learned very much in the past year, like year and a half, is I've changed up my drafting process. I've changed up how I like operate because I was trying so hard to make something happen, like, you know, square peg, round hole kind of thing, that it was like, I have to be like this. This is how my brain works. And kind of letting go, like allowing myself to see announcements on Twitter and like, you know, instead of getting that thing of like, oh, that concept looks so close to mine, I want to cry, instead of being like, well, that just means it's hot right now. And whenever I get there, it might sell, you know, it might get somebody's attention. And like, just kind of that little shift in thinking and shift in like process has helped so much astronomically this past year.
Lindsay, are there any like insights from the other side of publishing that you think most kind of aspiring authors would be surprised to find out?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, definitely. I just remember being in with debut author groups, and even like my pitch wars year, where I was a mentee in 15. And I just remember like seeing people like really get sort of like frustrated or worked up about like not hearing back from like their marketing team or their PR teams. And I just, you know, a lot of times I just want to be like, look, they're just busy.
Yeah.
That's literally all it is. Cause I was in the, I was a designer. I did like marketing material. So like I did marketing materials for a lot of books, and everybody's just swamped in publishing. Like that is really the truth. And you hear it all of the time that everybody is just, you know, stretched so thin, and it's only gotten worse in the last couple of years as like the publishers are consolidating, and you know, the big five is now the big one. I don't even know at this point. I'll check tomorrow and see what it actually is.
I'm a year out, and I often have people say like, oh, well, like talk to your publicity or marketing people. And I'm like, I haven't really met them yet. Like I know who they are, but, and that's not as much as I want to be like, let's get going. Like they still have 2, 3, 4 seasons of books left to get through before mine. So like,
That was the other thing. Like you're not like so many people like worrying about stuff. I'm like, your season is still several seasons out. You are not on the docket yet. Don't worry about it. Like really, it'll come. I'm waiting in line, and it is not my turn.
Right. Exactly.
I think that's the other thing is watching Twitter and watching things move from an outside perspective is things move so fast. They move so fast. Like, and I know from like an author standpoint and from like a publishing, like being an author and publishing, it's like everything's moving so slow for you, but things are inside of publishing, it seems that things are happening. Deals are happening very quickly. When they happen, they happen, they get big publicity. And it just makes things seem almost from a social media perspective with authors too, because they are encouraged to like churn out content, not just their writing content, but also their social media,
you know what I'm trying to say? Like the idea of you're supposed to be a presence and you're supposed to be a personality and you're supposed to pump out things to draw readership and to draw fans. And it makes things seem so big, so important, happening so quickly, all of the things. But in reality, it's happening very slowly and things are happening in these segmented chunks of like, it's not your time yet. Hold up. And then once, you know, like I imagine like once Emily, you get there, it's going to be
just I feel like it's all at once. Yeah. I mean, even my agent was saying the other day, I think that like the vast majority of pre-sales happen like a week or two before the book comes out, you know? So like we're out here, I'm out here, you know, 14 months out being like, I don't have a pre-sale link. Like people can't order my book yet. And it's like, they're not going to. Because as far as they're concerned, this is a million years away. Like, so I'm out here trying to hustle and, like, counting my Goodreads ads. And it's just, like, most readers are like, okay, come back to me when your book's about to come out. Like, it's just too soon.
Yeah, so it's always really funny, like, working, you know, in publishing and being, like, my author brain knowing that I want my promotion as soon as the book is announced versus I'm actually creating the promotion material. And it's, like, for like a month before, a week before, you know, a month after, you know, like it doesn't stop like as after the pub date, you know. So it was just two completely different spheres of like part of your brain and just like two different places. And so, I think like, you know, like authors really need to just remember that your team will get to you.
Yeah.
you're so used to seeing these big campaigns just exploding all over the place, and those are probably like the timing of that is probably not what you expect. Like they probably haven't been doing that for the last year. They probably did that in the last 6 weeks, you know, things like that.
Right.
But I want to go back to something Anna said for a second, and that sort of like pressure to be promoting on social media and stuff like that. And I think that's one of those things, like I will just say to you guys, I don't do that anymore. Like I kind of like, you know, tried to do a little bit when like Gunslinger Girl came out, but I also knew that there was nothing that I could do that would be better than what my publisher was going to be doing for that book. So I did not do a whole lot. And also just like, I don't have a lot of followers. I don't have a big presence. And I think authors are afraid to not be a big presence on social media.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say like, don't worry about that.
Yeah. Well, and so much of social media too is other writers, which they buy books too. But, you know, like I've been pretty fortunate over the past year or so that, you know, my like Twitter following has grown, like it feels like a lot to me. It's not, you know, it doesn't make me some huge name in anything, but I have to remind myself that like, even if every single one of my Twitter followers bought my book, that still wouldn't be enough to like get me on a list or something. You know what I mean? Like just the number of readers there are in the world that are just not following people on Twitter or not following like that. It, like you said, there's only so much I can do.
Yeah. That's really the majority of your buyers are probably not going to be people who follow you on Twitter or follow you on Instagram or whatever.
Uh-huh.
Yep. And that's okay. It's probably good.
Yeah. It's fine. Right. Yeah, and it's like one of those things, like I'd say like, don't feel compelled to do things unless you think you will enjoy doing them, because that's when you're going to burn out. If you feel pressured to be doing all of these things all of the time, you are going to get burnt out. You're going to not feel good about it.
I think too, part of authordom is like, we can write the book. People always say the only thing you can control is writing the book. And it's true. And that's supposed to be like an encouraging thought. But I think for so many of us, it's like, okay, like we made this book, baby. Now, like, what can I do? And when it's hard to hear that the answer for the most part is like, just go write something else. Like, let the people who do marketing and promotion do marketing and promotion. Let people that do sales do sales. You write the book. Your job is to write the book.
Right.
Oh, yeah. And I will tell you, I've had countless conversations with people in marketing and PR about like how books sell and how to make them sell. And I'd say like, no one really knows the magic formula.
Yeah.
Not even people who've been working in the industry for decades. There's just books you think are going to sell like gangbusters and they don't, you know?
Yeah.
And there's books that you think are these quiet little things. They're like, oh, it's cool. Like it'll sell a few thousand copies and it explodes for whatever reason. Like there is just almost no way of knowing.
Yeah. Word of mouth is such a big thing. Like I think it's important for publishers and authors, mostly for publishers, you know, to make sure that the books get like that the people who would love them the most are aware of them. But then it's kind of like at that, like you're kind of trying to light the spark to make sure that people are, if they're going to read it and love it and talk about it, then they have to know it exists. But after that, you know, you can't control who's telling who to read what and who's recommending it to their friends. And so it is.
I think that goes back to what you were saying, Lindsay, about don't do something unless you want to do it and think you'll get joy out of it. And I just have this like little theory that people realize when you have joy for something, and that unspoken thing is what gets word of mouth to spread. Is like, look how, like, I think of, and I'm going to give her a shout out because every time I see her TikToks, it makes me like so happy, is Ayana. Mm-hmm. Every time Ayana posts something, it just feels, I hope she's having fun. And she's like, watch her message me and be like, no, they're miserable. And I, no, she loves them.
No, she's she seems like she enjoys me, just making have fun. Them. And I'm like, I yes. don't know how to have yeah. fun.
And
on
that,
TikTok.
Like, whenever I see somebody like, you genuinely love this thing, I genuinely love this thing. So mm-hmm. I am going to retweet this. I'm going to shout about it. Like, this seems like I just want to be part of that joy as well. And
but also to know that like the audience is the same way. And like, uh-huh. so once you toss the book out there, you know, then you hope that it finds readers that love it enough that their enthusiasm will then, you know, help it get out there to other readers. But like, exactly. you can't make that happen. You just have to kind of hope it happens.
Yeah, yeah. And you should be doing like what, like I said, like what you like to do. Like I was saying, you'll never find me on TikTok. I'm not a person who likes to be on camera typically. So like, you're never mm-hmm. going to see me doing those like fun TikToks. Yeah. I think people need to like not feel compelled to do that. If that's not their jam, then don't do that. Find the thing that makes you like happy. Like I'll make a silly little like ad to put on Twitter mm-hmm. or something for my book right. or something. Like that's, you know, that's fun for me, but you know, like you shouldn't really cave to the pressure of burning yourself out to be following somebody else's path to promotion, yeah. basically.
Yeah. And I think I read something recently that actually talked about Book Talk and how it's selling books. And the verdict was not that authors are selling books on TikTok. It was that, you know, if you get the right teenager who reads your book and loves it and cries about it, then maybe that'll sell your book. But like we as authors getting up there and trying to be like, look at my book, it can only do so much. So if you enjoy uh-huh. it, great, that's fun. But yeah, don't wear yourself
yeah.
out.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
I do actually. I dream of like just like giving up like not giving up book stuff on my social media, but like I'm much happier posting silly things like photos I took on a walk or my latest cocktail recipe as opposed to like promoting my books.
Right.
Well, I'm in a place now where I have bound manuscripts of my book, but it, you know, doesn't have a cover or anything. And so much of social media now is very visual. And I'm just like, it's hard to even take cool pictures or do fun TikToks about a book when like you don't actually have the book in front of you. So part of me is like, I'm just not gonna worry about it too much right now. Yeah,
you should just like take pictures of it in, like in your bathroom with like a towel around it like it's naked because it doesn't have a cover yet.
I've been trying to think of like fun stuff like that. Yeah, like how to treat it. That's like it's like it. A baby book. It's this little baby book that just has, you know, it's like the caterpillar that hasn't become the butterfly yet.
Oh my gosh, can you please make this is me enjoying and getting excited about it, so I will make it for you. Can you take your bound manuscript, and once you have ARCs, can you like have it try on different covers that you thought it might try? So like cute. Maybe it puts on Caraval, and then it's like, yeah. no, thanks, not that style. And then it tries on something with a person on the cover, and it's like, no, thanks, not that style. And then it puts on its own cover, and it's the ARC, and it's like, yeah, that's it. Like, please let that
I'm going to figure out how I would do that so that I'll be ready when the day comes. Yeah. I like it. I love it.
I love this idea so much. Please let me make
my little naked book.
It will be my only TikTok ever.
I will send you all the materials and be like, go, Hannah. Do it for me. Play dress up with my book.
Oh my God, I would love that. Please. Everybody send me. That's my new brand. That's my new thing. That's my new business. I make cover reveals where they're trying on clothes. Oh my goodness.
Someone could make a killing just making like TikTok videos for authors.
I have never made a TikTok. Trust me with your babies. That's a lie. I'm kidding. Please don't send anything to us.
Well, I get
seriously
sent
like that's the energy that like anything you put on book promo yeah, social right. media needs. It does not need. I feel compelled to do this. You know.
Yeah.
So I true. Want to play dress up with your
yes.
books.
if you want to play dress up with your books, play dress up with your books.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and also it's easy. It's easier to have more fun when you're not treating it like it is supposed to be selling books. You know, like it's yeah. fun. It's exciting to get a book deal. It's fun to work on a book. You know, writing is – it's such a fun community of creative people that do cool stuff. And so, like, I think it's great for people to, like, let themselves have fun on social media if that's what they want to do.
Yeah.
Right.
Because when you start to see it as, like, you're doing this because you have to do this to sell your book, then it just kind of sucks any joy out of it that might have been there.
Yeah. Like, I'll actually – like, and I'll be pretty honest here. Like, there were a bunch of things that, you know, like, I tried out doing in like sort of like book, not just specifically social media, just like the whole book world in general and like the promotion world and the marketing world. And there was stuff I did just because like that's what you did. And I uh-huh. didn't feel great doing it sometimes. So like, and just coming out of the marketing part of publishing and knowing that nothing I was doing personally was moving the needle. I don't have that type of influence. I realized, like, I just don't have to do this. Like, if this is not making me happy, I can step back and not do this. I don't have to be on the every book panel I can get myself onto. I can be in the audience if I want to be in the audience and just watch everybody else talk about their books with joy. I don't have to be the one on stage, you know? Right. And, like, that was actually just felt like a huge weight off to just be, like, just do what you feel good doing.
Yeah. You know, it's like this podcast. People are like, oh, do you think it's going to help? Like, are you doing it because you're trying to market your book? And I'm like, no, I usually actually forget to talk about my book. Like, I told Anna, I was like, we interview other authors about their books, but, like, we've never done an interview about my book. Like, I'm doing this because I like talking to Anna.
Yeah. Yeah, like in Boston has, like, a bunch of, like, we had a bunch of cons pre-COVID. And, you know, like, there's, like, you feel, like, compelled to, like, apply to be a panelist at every single one of them. And mm-hmm. I'm like, you know what? No, there's one that I like. I'll be the panelist at that one. And half the time, like, the panels aren't even out about books. I just, like, it's a fan con. So I'll just, like, I'm just going to talk about whatever this fandom is that I like on this panel. And I just stopped. I didn't even, like, try to, like, apply to these things. I'm like, I don't want to do this, you know?
Right. I think about, I don't know, this isn't true for everyone, but I almost think I thought about the advice of write every day. Mm-hmm. And how that kind of gets skewed into, like, writing actual words every day or sitting at your computer for 2 hours to crank out a chapter or a scene or whatever. And I really stopped myself from feeling compelled, like I had to do mm-hmm. it. It goes back to that have to do it. And I stopped that, but I still kept my discipline in the sense of I gave myself goals for the week. Mm-hmm. And if that got accomplished on a Saturday, great. If that got accomplished on a couple days, great. I didn't have to write every day. And if I wanted to, if I felt inspired to write something that wasn't on my goal, I wrote that thing. And this is the book that I can only go by what other people have said. And they, like, in reading this book, the one comment I have gotten from every single person who's read it is, like, I can tell you had fun writing this.
Yeah.
And I made That's sure, awesome. Like, every time I sat down, I was like, if I'm not having fun, I'm going to stop and I'm going to go write the thing that makes me have fun. Or I'm going to take a break and brainstorm and have fun doing that.
Or even, like, I think I've given myself permission to see non-writing things as writing. Like, yes. Reading. Mm-hmm. If I'm struggling to write, sometimes it's because my creative well is empty. And so if I grab my Kindle and I go and I buy 10 more, you know, contemporary rom-coms, which is not what I write, but it is what makes me happy, and I go sit in my hammock chair and I read for an hour, that still counts as writing because it is going to give me the fuel that I need to write when I'm ready to do it.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, watch this. I'm going to bring this all back around to the work-life balance.
Nice.
I'm excited.
I think this is really sort of, like, the point here is that we all have limited bandwidths.
Yes.
And
I love that term.
Yes. We can't. You know, you have to really, like, evaluate what things fit in your bandwidth and if you are not happy with the things that are in your bandwidth, consider not doing them. Like, I can almost guarantee if you're not doing them, the world is not going to end. Your publishing world is not going to end.
Yes.
It may honestly not be affected in the least.
It might even help because then you have more bandwidth for the things you do care about.
Whoa. Yeah, if you need to prioritize your writing time, if you just want to churn out manuscripts and never be on Twitter, then bless you. That's probably a great idea. Or if you want to be doing, like, if you want to be doing social media stuff, then do that. If you want to be doing, I'm thinking of, like, I walk through cemeteries and steal names off of gravestones. If I want to do that for an hour a day, I'm going to do that. You know, like, you just need to figure out the things that you love in terms of, like, your publishing journey and your creation. Yes. Like, true. You know,
because as we talked about earlier, it's not the greatest idea to go into publishing in hopes of becoming a very, very wealthy person.
Yeah.
Most of us, I think, go into it because we really enjoy creating stories. We like seeing where we can go with them. And so we have to remember that, like, that is the thing you can focus on, not just in terms of, like, getting successful as a career, but also just because that's the point, right?
Right.
Yeah. You want to hear my favorite publishing joke?
Yes.
I'm ready.
So how do you make a small fortune in publishing?
I don't know how.
You start with a large fortune. Eric for that joke. That's my favorite publishing joke of all time.
I've heard it about wineries, which is, like, how do you make $1 million with a winery? Is, like, you invest $2 million. So, yeah, similar idea.
Oh, my gosh. It's so true.
So I true.
I think that's a little, like, my closing statement here is I hope that the one lesson I have learned during this disaster of a panini is – I have learned what matters in life and what doesn't for me, that's my been my personal journey, is when something doesn't matter and it's not bringing me joy, get the curse word out of here. Like, I like, get out of here. I don't want you. Like, I don't do that thing anymore. And you can do the same thing with writing or with whatever creative pursuit you have. Go walk in graveyards if that makes you happy. Go make a TikTok playing dress up with your books if that makes you happy. But if it doesn't make you happy and you have the privilege, stop doing it.
Like, my new goal is to find a non-writing hobby that I'm not good at, ideally. Like, I was thinking drawing because I'm terrible at drawing. And I was like, well, that would give me something that is a gentle challenge that gives me a break from writing, that's not something that I think I have any chance of being, you know, quote unquote, good at. Therefore, I don't have to try. I can just work on, like, you know, being kind to myself in a creative area. So that's my goal for the year.
Love it.
Yeah.
Gosh, this has been great. We went angsty for a little bit, and then we came back, and we found the hope, and we did it.
Did a segue. It was almost like we had a plan.
I'm glad that we went angsty. I do feel that, like, there is a pressure to also not be angsty in the publishing world sometimes. Like, no, it's okay. And honestly, like, you all know, if you go to conventions and you're talking to people face-to-face, there's always angst.
We're a dramatic little artistic bunch of people. It's a big feeling.
And the truth is, you see a lot of the success stories on social media. Mm-hmm. You see a lot of the success stories in public, and you don't hear the private failures. And so
absolutely,
we need spaces to be angsty as well as being positive. It's good for everyone's health.
Totally.
No toxic positivity. Just
Oh my God, I just learned that term and I love it. Toxic positivity is such a great term to know.
That's true. Yep. It's a good one.
That's a whole nother episode. Toxic positivity.
Oh yeah, please. I would definitely do that.
We'll invite you back so that I can have a conversation about that.
It'll just be me and Anna just like going off about toxic positivity.
Stop being little, what my mom used to call a perky Pollyanna. Like, don't.
Like that don't also that. Pairs well with the like the what is it? The sympathy Olympics, you know, the like someone, you know, it could be worse. And it's like, stop right now. That never has ever made anyone feel better in the history of ever.
I
need you to pat my back and say, I'm so sorry. And that's it. That's all. Please don't even pat my back. Just be like, I'm so sorry. Here's a beer.
Yep.
That's all I need. Thank you very much.
Love it. Well, that feels like a perfect place to wrap up. Yeah.
I'm so sorry. Here's a beer. Thanks for being on
the show. Do we want to make Lindsay pitch her book badly or?
So we do, you can do this for any book or any work in progress that you're doing, but we usually end with pitch your book, but do it badly. So you pitch it as boring and terrible as possible.
My next book is Deadlock Rebels. It's a Western that is... Am I pitching this badly? It's not dissimilar from my first book.
It's your first book with a new skin.
It's my, exactly. Oh, that's a perfect pitch for it. It's my first book with a new skin. It is actually not. It's actually not. It's very different, but I do think it's funny to draw those parallels.
Yeah. I love that so much.
You're establishing your brand.
Reboot.
Yeah. No, I absolutely love that. And I'm stealing that. It's Guns Gonna Girl with a new skin.
Nice. I love it.
Awesome.
Well, this has been so much fun.
So much
Thanks for being on our show,
Yes, thank
Lindsay.
You so much.
Thank you for having me. This was a ton of fun.
All right. Well, I think that's all. Anything else? We good?
I think we're good.
I guess we just say the word bye, but we don't actually click out of Skype.
Yes, we just
forgot to
warn
you about that.
Okay, no,
I'll just start
that.
The bye train. Bye.
Bye.
Everyone, thank you again for listening to another episode of Basic Pitches. We super appreciate it. Remember, if you like what you heard, go to iTunes, like, subscribe, tell somebody about it, yell at your grandma, I don't know, tell them how great this show is. We also want to thank Lindsay Ely for being on the show today. It was fantastic to talk to her. You can pre-order her book, Deadlock Rebels. It comes out on June 1st to 2021 this year, so not even next year, which you have to wait until next year for Emily's book, The Last Fenestra. But until then, you can go add it on Goodreads. I think that's it. I'll see you next time. Bye, pitches!